And good afternoon. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is
Scotty Hertz. And for the next 10 hours, we're going to regale you with, oh no, it won't be as long as that meeting on Monday. You were there for the duration, weren't you?
I might still be there.
I think, yeah. In fact, that meeting is still going on, so we're going to talk over it. Solving nothing, but
shut up, James Gordon!
Going over the issues of the day, then going over them again. And
it
again,
was
and
like
again.
One of the. Yeah, it was.
Did
like
you get a tea break at least? Was there like a.
There was like a 15-minute pizza break.
Oh. Wow. Carbs will be required after something like that.
Oh, no, the media didn't get pizza. The council and
you
staff
get to watch
pizza.
People eat pizza.
Sure. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast through Podbean or on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, we're going to go back to Alberta, where Jason Kenney wishes he was going on the campaign trail, or maybe considering, maybe not considering the non-unitedness in his United Conservative Party over gay-straight alliances and abortions, and we'll talk about those struggles. And then you may have noticed that hate is on the rise, even here in plain Jane Vanilla Canada, but one group is standing up to fight back, the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, and we're going to talk to its founder and executive director, journalist Evan Bolgard. And then finally, Canada will have legalized pot in a couple of months, or will it? Mm. There are signs that the Trudeau government might be pressured to delay, but Trudeau's holding his ground. So what are the odds we're going to be sparking up on Canada Day legally? Good question. But we're going to start with the elections here.
What? Really?
Yay!
No.
It's Ontario election time. The writ
finally happened.
The writs were drawn up. As Steve Paikin so snootily reminded us, it's not the writ is dropped. The writ is not dropped. Singular writ not dropped. The writs, plural, are drawn up.
And do they get official stamps and seals? And
probably.
A courier delivers them and somebody opens a scroll and says, hear ye, the election shall begin at
they
midnight.
Should. They should. They had a town crier for when the royal baby was born in Clown.
Yes.
So they should do
and
that.
The whole thing on foolscap that's used to be handwritten.
I mean, the economic anxiety amongst town criers is tremendous. We need to get those guys back to work is what I'm saying.
Guelph needs a town crier. So we're advertising the position. It pays no money. Pays no money whatsoever. You just got to be loud and have a bell and a flash dresser.
Must bring your own bell.
Yes. So election's on and...
You watched the debate while I was at committee. You
I
watched
did,
the first
yes.
Debate.
I was doing a bit of cramming for the show and the debate. It's kind of weird. I don't think there's ever been a debate before the writs were dropped.
Mm-hmm. Second debate, too.
I don't recall that ever happening. So
first televised debate.
This whole, an assigned election date changes the whole dynamic, I guess, because it's like, well, it's not really, the election's not really on, but it's on. As soon as you know when the election date is then the election's on,
sure.
Whether it's official or unofficial. So you have a debate 2 days before the actual writ dropping. It was interesting. It was pretty much an ad for city news. Every question sort of tied into one of their stories, and then they got the person from the story to ask a question.
It's kind of brilliant, actually.
Yeah.
Because they need all the help they can get.
Yeah, and you could tell that...
Hold on to Tanya Kim, but that's fine.
I'll give a bit of a review, I guess, of how the candidates did. It was obviously two very seasoned politicians versus somebody with zero experience in that domain, or less, not very much. I think you said one of the debate... Oh, no, he didn't make that debate, did he? That was the Black community one. He didn't go,
No, he did not
did
go
he?
To it. He was doing a northern
he
swing.
He being Doug Ford was up north talking to the folks.
Well, we know it wasn't Mike Schreiner. He wasn't invited.
Yes, and the interesting protest. They were showing the protesters outside with the green tape on their mouth saying,
presumably,
why?
Mike Schreiner's protesters weren't paid for.
No. Yes, that was the other thing, too. Doug Ford's cheering section, supposedly paid for by the local candidate in that riding.
Yeah, Toronto Centre, Canada.
Even so, I mean... You can't shake loose enough people.
I would point out that Doug Ford's name is on her signs too.
Yes. So who knew what when? We don't know. But it was a funny kickoff in that respect. So he Is he ready? I don't think so. I don't think he's ready for prime time, but it looks like...
Well, there was also the press conference, I want to say Tuesday, with where Matt Gurney of Global asked him, can you tell us how a bill becomes a law? And he's like, I'm not going to answer any gotcha questions, which... You know, it's not great. Using the word gotcha question because, the connotations go back to Sarah Palin and that, that somebody's playing a game just by asking you a sensible question about do you understand the job you're going to do. And then on Twitter, I saw somebody tweet about that, and then somebody else responded like, well, when are they going to ask Kathleen Wynne and Andrea Horvath that question too?
They actually know.
They've been in the legislature for years, and if they don't know how a bill becomes a law...
I could give you a detailed, at least 1 hour answer on that each, probably. Whereas Doug Ford was probably like, I'm just a bill. Who knows?
Which is not the Canadian.
No. But that's probably the first thing that popped into his head.
It's the first thing that pops into my head. It's the first thing that pops into everybody's head. but it's, starting the campaign that way, just kind of leaves a bitter taste. But then there's other things that, are leaving a bitter taste. And so much has happened in the last few days. We forgot that Tanya Greg Allen was kicked out of the caucus.
Yes.
She's no longer running, I think, in Mississauga Center. She has been eliminated from running. Not like old school eliminated.
And do you think she's still going to run? Maybe independent or another party with similar views and values? I'm thinking maybe Alliance or...
I don't think the Alliance want her.
I don't think... I mean, she's not exactly a hot property anymore, right? But...
I think her currency was delivering the leadership for Doug.
Yeah. That's significant. I mean, that you go from zero to hero like you're a player when you do that. Yeah. And then you're promptly stabbed like something out of Shakespeare.
Right. But that's the weird thing is, like, there was nothing revealed on Saturday that nobody knew about on Friday. And it's especially going when you have this guy, Andrew Lawton. In London, who is still on the ballot after days
what
now
would
of
he
stories.
Use for an excuse if it isn't true that it wasn't mental illness that made him say those things, then that is a horrible out.
Well, he was like saying things as early as like last year that the Anglican Church being okay with gay marriage is one of the things that made him leave the Anglican Church. Like he said that in the last couple of years, so
right.
You know, it's clearly not mental illness making him say homophobic things.
No. And was he another appointee? Yes.
Yeah, he was one of the 11.
Yeah, okay, so.
He was one of the Earth Day 11. I'm coining that term.
dirty but, fool on Earth Day. Yeah. Depending on your perspective. But
we'll save that one for when Ray Farrar comes in.
Yeah.
You were one of the Earth Day 11.
I hate Earth Day. No, how dare you say that?
But, I mean, the Lawton thing is, this is the kind of stuff that stopped Harper from having a majority government for like three tries, is that you get a couple of crazy people on the ballot and it taints the whole slate.
Yeah. And I mean, and appointing people is one thing, but if you haven't vetted them internally,
right,
you got a problem. Or you have no one else, right? It's like
they did have other people though.
Yeah. And that's the problem. And this is exactly what they're complaining about under Patrick Brown. It's like, wow, the nomination process wasn't followed through with. And it's like, boom, it's like, well, we're running out of time. You. You're on the ballot. So it's not exactly correcting the problem as Doug. Doug's going to clean up the mess. It's not cleaned up yet.
No.
You should have chosen by the riding people in every riding, in my view, anyway. I don't care what your politics are.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or maybe not, but you can't say, I'm going to clean this all up and then do exactly the... exactly what caused the problem in the first place, right?
But
I only did it 11 times, right. Not 100 times. I don't know.
There's a wing and a prayer aspect to the Ford campaign that Ford Nation plus people being mad at Wynne going to equal, electoral victory. And the polls bear that out to a certain
extent.
Seem
to, yeah.
But, they've kind of reached the ceiling on their support. I think it's 40%. And then 60%... is like kind of soft support. It's like for the Liberals or NDP, but these people are also persuadable. And I would dare say that probably there's a certain percentage of PC voters who are also persuadable, that if we start seeing something tilt one way. So it is interesting. And I forget who it was that pointed it out. It was one of the articles I was reading that Kathleen Wynne in the last, or the Liberals in the last two elections under Kathleen Wynne, the last election, ended up breaking in the last couple of weeks, which suggests that a lot of people making last minute decisions, like eventually going, okay, Liberal again, whatever.
Be like, they're not so bad. The
basically,
one poll had 75% of respondents saying that they weren't happy with any of the selections for premier.
I believe it. Although I don't know what people have for it against Andrea Horvath, but
in that same poll, yeah. Andrea Horvath came out on top as in terms of who do you think would make the best premier, marginally more than Doug Ford. But as we know, polls are polls. We quote them a lot.
Polls are polls.
Polls are schmoles. Stand by your landline. The pollsters are calling. I don't know if that's changed yet. I haven't really got. Have you got any polling calls in your cell phone yet? I just get calls saying that there's a warrant out for my arrest if I don't call.
Oh, really?
Don't call Canada Revenue.
I got one today that was like somebody was trying to wire me $750 to my CIBC account, which I don't have.
You don't have a CIBC account at all?
No.
If you do not call.
I've gotten pulls on my cell phone before. Usually, though, I'm immediately disbarred from participating as a member of the media.
As a journo. I was going to say, you probably get on all those lists every time you have to sign up for something.
Sure.
They got you.
But
number.
My mom likes it because one of the questions they ask you is anyone in your family a member of the media? And my mom just says, yep. And then she doesn't have to do a poll. There you go. Happy Mother's
but
Day.
But he's fake news. No, he's not fake news. Fake news, okay, no.
Does anybody
that'd be
hilarious.
Family,
that'd be hilarious
in your family
if the next time
news,
that happens, I say, does fake news count?
Well, like, does that, if you're like a serial blogger, does that count as media now? Or
I don't, yeah.
It's
don't
like everybody see, using it as an excuse.
I don't see why not. Well, I mean, if you're blogging about like crochet.
Now that I know that, I'm going to say, yes, I am.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, because
this is media.
I don't trust anybody calling my phone that I don't know. So don't call me if I don't know you.
Don't call me. Good message.
yeah, don't call
where
me.
Were we, you know?
And I won't call you.
I did want to mention Doug Ford talking about transit yesterday
oh, yeah.
and promoting
what
transit.
What is it, a billion now?
$5 billion.
$5 billion
for subways in Toronto. Which I mean, $5 billion will build approximately one subway. But
with one stop at the rate they're going.
But that's the thing, though. That's, you know, for Doug to come out and be like, I'm the transit guy. I'm going to build you transit. It's like, really? You know,
is that all he's giving to Toronto, too? Like, he's obviously a Toronto-centric person, but I think a lot of people in the province would be like, really? They're getting $5 billion, and I have to get an Uber to go shopping up in wherever, Innisfil, you know?
Yeah, well, that's true. Innisfil does
just
have Uber
to,
as public transit.
Are you just
but,
trying to please Toronto?
It's you know, it's working.
It seems to be working so for them. So, I mean, that's alternative method of delivery.
Right.
Having said that, it's, you know, there are people I think that say, oh, you're dumping all this money in Toronto. What about us? What are we going to get? We're going to get
well,
a GO train.
He didn't mention Kitchener.
We're going to get two GO trains. We're going to get
well,
all
he
day.
Didn't mention all day two-way GO trains. But I mean,
wow,
I don't think there's anything
actually
Doug specifically or like Andrea Horvath specifically can do to speed that up. Because
no, the wheels
are in motion
for that,
aren't they? Yeah, the infrastructure's not there. You know, I think Kathleen Wynne and the Liberals deserve a bit of blame because every year they come out with yeah. a press release that's saying, you know, it's coming. It's coming when it's...
There's an environmental assessment.
It's been coming for 5 years.
For now, you get to go off and then you have to take a pump card all the way to...
Oh, actually, I kind of want that, actually. but no, it's you know, there's nothing Doug can necessarily do.
No.
And it just strikes me as incredibly disingenuous talking about money about public transit when him and his brother trash Transit City, something that was ready to go, had all the money lined up, had
but
all the planning
saved
lined up.
$1 billion.
Horse hockey.
Well,
but
it was his line in the debate. He kept saying, "Is like, is this all you got, man? Really?" Like,
yeah, it is all he's got. It's the same lie his brother told again and again and again during the 2014 mayor's
which
race.
Was patently
that was
false.
Debunked and debunked and debunked.
I remember
and debunked.
We did a whole thing on debunking that. I was like, it's not really.
Everybody debunked it.
It's like climate change, right? Everybody's debunking it, but there's still one person says, hey, you know what? I actually saved you $3 billion. No, I don't know. But yeah, oh, in terms of the who's winning in signs right now? I'd say in locally it's Mike Schreiner.
Sly's doing good.
Sly's probably a close second, but I haven't seen first sign MVP. I saw when I got up very early Wednesday morning, so I think the minions must have been out all night putting those stakes in. So.
Oh, for sure. I have not seen any PC or NDP signs yet.
No, not one yet. I think they're out there. I saw a stack of...
I'm sure they're out there, but they're like I don't think there's the maybe the ground game yet.
No.
For either.
It's, so if you want to sign for the party of your choice, contact the office and...
Yeah. I'll put in a quick plug for the All Candidates meeting tonight at 7 p.m. at the Italian-Canadian Club. This is the first big election event in Guelph. And to our knowledge, all the party candidates have RSVP'd. We don't know if they will all be there, but it might be a good chance to start hearing from your local politicians. And usually good time.
Check and we'll be there, so if you see us... And you know what we look like.
Come and say hi.
Dun, 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 dun. Your open sources team is on the case because we live for elections.
That's true.
It's why we, well, not completely why we exist, but. And should mention, you know, we'll do our, we are having our normal, at least tentatively so far, the election night radio, which is.
That's in, yeah, in the works.
Epic.
It will be epic. I've got a.
It'll be me trying not to swear.
I have an epic poster that we're going to roll out for that one.
Excellent.
I've already started working
on it. Plaster right over people's election signs. All right.
Oh, that would be dope. Probably getting into trouble, though. Also getting into trouble is Jason Kenney. They had a big United Conservative Party convention last weekend, and I think if Kenney, who's, is it my imagination, or has he lost weight?
I was going to comment on that, and I thought it shouldn't matter, but yes, he's definitely been...
Good for him.
Cutting back or working out or one or the other.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's getting in shape. Political shape, we don't know, but physical shape, yeah, it's looking pretty good.
So they had this convention, and I don't know if they're hoping to do a little maybe turn to the left in terms of social issues, or at least maybe a turn to the center. But the party seemed to have different ideas. So we got 57% of the party members in favor of a motion to pass a law that parents be told when their child is in any after-school club of a religious or sexual nature. And so that's a pretty broad definition to include gay, straight alliances.
Because we know sexual school clubs are like all of them, right? From chess to Harry Potter. Jeez.
And then the other one, the other big one that's voting 74% in favor to reopen... the issues of abortion via a law that parents be told that when their child gets an invasive medical procedure. Guess what they mean by invasive medical procedure? Although Kenney said that the motion was brought by someone whose child was vaccinated against without his knowledge. I'm not sure I consider vaccination invasive. It's a prick in the arm. I think... When
depends on your view of vaccines, right? Especially if you're an anti-vaxxer. And well, I'm sure there's loads of them.
That's true.
In the UCP.
Yeah.
But so I mean, I guess I shouldn't say that unsubstantiated, but I think there's a bit of a parallel. Maybe Wild Rose people. Ex-Wild Rose.
Well, it's definitely ex-Wild Rose people.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because he had Rick MacGyver saying that, you know, the vote on the gay straight alliances was like the Lake of Fire moment, and that was like a reference to an email somebody sent in 2012 that, you know, homosexual people were going to perish in a lake of fire or some such nonsense.
And that's the song I was looking for the bottom of the hour, Lake of Fire by Nirvana, but I couldn't find it because... Yeah, let's not be the Lake of Fire party. I think he got booed when he said that at the mic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but I mean, that was...
There's truth to that, though, right?
That was super ballsy, though.
It's like those little chick publication pamphlets where, like, you know, Satan's controlling your life. That's what I visualize when I...
Right, but that was like... Fire party. That was, like, he was emphatic, and it was super ballsy to go in front of that crowd and make that request. It buckles my mind that, you know, this party, which is... sort of based on the idea of we need to get rid of the NDP because they are the root of all evil.
They're the Antichrist of parties. Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, they're going to... And it made me wonder this and I'll try to put it in word form. But but it made me wonder, like, does it, like, to have Kenny and a lot of people worried about how this is all going to, like, come out in the election next year, the Alberta election, are they worried that they're not going to attract more centrist people by moving forward with this? Or should they even be worried, considering that, you know, just by the votes alone, if you combine the totals of the Conservatives and the Wild Rose, they stand a pretty good chance of forming government mm-hmm. this time. Should they even care? Because people are going to vote. People who are at the who are going to vote UPC, UCP. I've been getting that confused all day. UCP?
Where?
You know, are obviously, you know, not going to be fans of the NDP to begin with. That, you know, how much? I guess I'm wondering how much wiggle room there is for non committed voters.
I think it depends on this is the great struggle with this party since its merger possibly before.
Yeah,
I mean, Kenny ran on something called the People's Grassroots Guarantee, and yet there's some suggestion that here are these motions being passed at the grassroots level at convention, which you would think would be hard and fast rules or things you would run on, but he's kind of saying, well, what? I think he said something to the effect of, you know, we take things under consideration or input. He called it input as if it was so much data, right? And this is it. You've got the classic, let's call them the fiscal type conservatives, which ran Alberta for probably 100 years, give or take, right? Until recently. Forever. But then the fundamental, I'll call them the fundies, and I don't mean fundamentalists necessarily as religious, but there is a religious element to it. The people that are more on policies like you'd mentioned about, you know, those darn gays in the schools and abortions and invasive procedures and the vaccines. I'm sure, I bet the vaccine that you were talking about, that somebody was vaccinated by mistake, was HPV. I think they probably have more problems with that because it's sexually related rather than mumps or measles or rubella, which you should all get immediately if you've never had it.
Because HPV, it's sexually transmitted.
I bet it was. So anything to do with sex, and especially sex and Bible crossover is the hot button issues right now. But he also came
great
out
crossover, by the way.
He also, well, yeah, the there was also his bit talking about the Green Left. Oh my God, the Green Left.
Oh, I forgot about the Green Left.
Left. I mean, anybody that resembles a bike riding Pink Okami is which is anybody who's not UCP probably, right? There's no nuance there. I think he's using the term Green Left incorrectly. He's specifically, I think, talking about the government in BC.
Well, it's also a progressive newspaper in Australia, but I digress.
Yeah, but they are green proper socialists as opposed to the Greens in BC, who I don't think are remotely socialist, right? Like Green Left is an actual political term talking about people who are eco-socialists, right? Not... he's using it. I think he's using it incorrectly, but it's working because like people immediately picture. I don't even think they picture Rachel Notley. They picture like, what's his name, Andrew
Weaver.
Andrew. I'm gonna call him Andrew Scheer. Yeah, so many Andrews. If it isn't Scheer. Andrew, it's Scott. If it isn't Scott, it's David. And if you don't have those names, you're done. So. Yeah, and he's obviously really angry in his view about the demonization of Alberta oil. They're picking us because what did he say? We are the Boy Scouts, so we're a soft target. Like, what are you talking about, dude?
Right. I mean, that was an interesting portion where he's like, the Green Left. They're not attacking Saudi Arabia or Venezuela or Russia.
Yes, they are.
Well, they are. But you know why? You know, if I live in Canada, why am I worried about oil policy in the Middle East or in Russia or in South America? It's like I obviously want to affect things here at home first. Before telling the rest
especially
of the world.
Especially if it's going
to
leak on my property, right?
Yeah. So I'm not sure what the point was there other than, you know.
He's just talking. He's just floating stuff. He's not the premier
but then he
yet.
Says,
he's not the government yet.
But
who
then
cares?
Well, he's acting like it because he's got a war room and he's, you know.
The war room. That's right. The war room against the Green Left.
And he's like, you know, we're going to go and get bogus charities
the
like
David
Suzuki Foundation.
We're going to crush them. It's not real. But he's got an honorary degree and you don't. Ha ha.
Well,
maybe
so.
He does from some
Suzuki?
Christian college. Yeah, does he?
Well, I think
Suzuki must have loads of honorary degrees.
I think Suzuki has a few. Pretty sure actual Jason Kenny does, but too,
Jason
but.
Kenny probably doesn't have one. He might. Probably not from a real university, but
the thing that galled me, but then though, was that he said like, "Oh well, Rachel Notley is an honorable public servant, and you know, people who are like sending her death threats are like loathsome people." And it's like, well, you know what? People sending her death threats are kind of because you and a lot of Alberta conservatives have been demonizing her since the moment she took office. You know, a lot of the stuff.
She's a demon.
You know, like the rebel hasn't been too kind, and Rachel Notley, certainly the rebel isn't. You know, being thinks Rachel Notley an honorable person.
Plus, all the trolls just sort of spouting. Trolls feeding on trolls, with
and it's not just like it's not just Notley either, but like any female politician in Alberta. Yeah. Like, there's people remember Sandra Jansen, who's now NDP, was a conservative, now NDP. So I guess maybe that answers my question. Maybe there is some crossover here, and maybe Kenny is right to be concerned that he's going to turn people off by, you know, opening the door to these wedge issues. I'm not sure why they would want to. Because it does seem like they have things pretty locked up, pretty sewn up. You know, this should be coasting, I would think. I think the big thing was combining the parties. That was the big hurdle to overcome. But I think stuff like this just means, like, maybe like in 5-10 years, we're going to be looking at another schism in the United Conservative Party again.
The Ununited?
The Ununited UCP, Conservative Ununited Party. Conservative, and everyone just goes back to their corners, and then... You know, Rachel Notley Jr. becomes premier or something.
Rachel Notley III.
I don't know if she has any kids, and I doubt they're named Rachel Notley Jr., but...
That'd be hilarious. But yeah, just quickly before the bottom of the hour, there was something else, too, that Kenny was at... He was at some sort of committee in Ottawa, and he's saying, oh, well, we're talking about climate change again. He's like, I'm not really sure to what degree, the precise degree to which humans are causing climate change. But he says we're not climate deniers, we're climate tax deniers. So spin it any way you want, sonny boy. The science is in.
Well, I mean, let me just say, that's progress. We're not denying climate change, that's progress.
But he is, though. He's saying, well, we don't know how much humans are causing it.
Well, he's
there's climate change, but we don't really
well,
know.
Well, he's acknowledging it. I mean, this is kind of the razor that a lot of... smarter conservatives are writing that, you know, we acknowledge there's this thing called climate change. We don't know how much of it is because we're pumping tons and tons of carbon into the atmosphere. I mean, it's disingenuous.
Temperatures in 800,000 years.
Yeah, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, which I understand. But, you know, Rome wasn't debunked in a day, I guess, is the lesson here. Okay, cool. We're going to take
decarbonized.
We're going to take a break, and then we're going to get Evan Bolgard on the phone, and then we're going to talk about legal weed. And you're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Was the folk classic John Henry, a little bit of spin on it. John Henry y los Vaqueros, which I think means cowboys in Spanish. That's from a brand new album on the station. Don Flemons presents Black Cowboys on Smithsonian Folkways, the African American Legacy Recordings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you dig in the Smithsonian Folkways, which I do, I played that for completely selfish reasons. I'm going to see what was going on. And yeah, so check it out.
Yeah. They do good work, the Smithsonian.
Oh, absolutely. Preserved so much.
Yeah. Anyway, I had a story, but I'll digress, because we do have a guest on the phone from a quiet corner in an airport somewhere in les États-Unis. We're joined by Evan Bolgard. You may know him as a writer from Vice, Canada Land, and the Canadian Jewish News, but he has started a new endeavor. He's the executive director of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. And Evan, can you still hear us from your airport hideaway?
I certainly can. I hope you can hear me okay.
We can hear you Absolutely. Very well, actually. It's turned out really well for us. So we appreciate your time. To begin with, can you talk a little about why you wanted to start the Canadian Anti-Hate Network? And I know this comes from your journalistic pursuits. And, you know, there's a certain dearth for an organization like this in Canada. But what made you say, you know, want to take the plunge and sort of build one yourself?
Well, we really saw an increase in both the number of hate groups, the number of their members, and both their online and offline activities. You know, beginning in 2014 was kind of the start of this new wave, at least what we were seeing in Canada. In 2016, it really took on this fever pitch. Mm-hmm. And I started covering this as a journalist, like back in early 2017, when this anti-Muslim movement really started, and hundreds of people were coming to city halls across Canada. And we started digging into these groups and found, you know, neo-Nazi ties, overt racism, calls for violence. And while, you know, individual collectives might have been doing good research on these hate groups and countering them in their cities, there really wasn't any organization across Canada that was doing that work, which seemed kind of silly that we never had an organization to counter hate groups, you know, a Canada-wide organization to do it. So I got together with all the people that, you know, are researchers in this field, journalists in this field, legal experts in this field, and we decided, you know, if we thought we needed an organization like it, you know, it was up to us to start it.
Yeah, that's the most interesting point to me is that we have not had an organization. You know, you've mentioned that you're kind of modeling this off the Southern Poverty Law Center in the United States, which has been doing this research for years and years and years. You know, why is it that you think Canada hasn't never followed suit? I mean, it's not like we're not unaccustomed to hate crimes here. I wonder if part of it has to do with maybe the Canadian image that, you know, if we're having to start an anti-hate group, maybe we're not as, you know, squeaky as we think we are.
Well, speaking to the Canadian exceptionalism thing,
yeah,
you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center says they have 954 active hate groups in the United States. The U.S. has about 10 times our population, and we have over 100 active hate groups. So when you're talking proportionality, you know, we have it's equivalent size, right?
Right.
But, I mean, there were other organizations that kind of did this work. I mean, back in the 90s, the Anti-Racist Action Network existed across Canada. And they tracked and stood up to hate groups and neo-Nazi groups like the Heritage Front, and were one part of the equation that shut it down. And there were other organizations in our civil society, like the Canadian Jewish Congress, which stood up kind of from a civil society side, and, you know, used legal tools and advocacy to also push back. So it has been done in bits and parts in Canada before, and we do have a blog that's been our best resource on hate groups going back 10 years called Anti-Racist Canada. But there was never any, like, professional organization that could speak authoritatively on the issue, both to activists, to media, to law enforcement, and to community groups, and that's kind of the role we want to step into, just like the Southern Poverty Law Center does in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So what are the objectives of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network?
Well, first and foremost, we start with investigative journalism, just like the SPLC does. So, you know, we identify these groups, we monitor them, both in their public spaces and in their, let's call it semi-private spaces. And we make that information available to media, to law enforcement, to community groups, et cetera, to inform them, like, this is the threat, you know. These groups often represent themselves to the media being like, hey, we're just anti-Islam, or hey, we're just against political Islam, or hey, we're just against violent extreme Islam. But then you dig into the group, and, like, you know, behind the scenes, what they're really saying is the only good Muslim is a dead Muslim, or things to that effect. So by exposing, like, what they really say, you know, disrupts their public image, which they haven't fairly earned by their actions.
Right.
And it lets people take steps to counter them. We've seen how just exposing them is hugely disruptive to their efforts. So that's our main activity. Everything will flow from exposing these groups accurately and in their own words for what they're doing.
Yeah, the image part I think is so key, because I think we still have the image of in our heads that racism looks like skinheads or it looks like somebody in a Klan robe. But actually, racism now looks like Faith Goldie.
Yes.
it's really quite remarkable. Do you think that's part of the struggle here? Is that, you know, the racism is kind of hidden. It's not hidden like I guess how we would typically think of the word hidden. But you know, in terms of it doesn't stand out, I guess, is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, but I strongly feel, you know, in a couple of years, 5 years from now, we're going to look back and be like, oh, the alt-right, that was just a rebrand of neo-Nazism. Mm. Because it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, after the Heritage Front was stomped around on the streets in the 90s and they were defeated, you know, at the time and finally, like, in retrospect, everybody was like, yeah, that was a neo-Nazi group. But, like, they had rebranded themselves because how could you be against heritage mm-hmm. and European culture and European identity? So, like, they really, like, they understand PR. They've traded in, you know, their jackboots and their Nazi salutes for suits, for Pepe the Frog memes, and you know, for fashy kind of haircuts and stuff. And I think people are starting to realize this stuff.
And there's also the code too, you know, things like 1488 and things like that. That, you know, that it's underground to the extent of you have to be sort of aware of the things like Pepe the Frog, which is probably one of the more well known memes. But you know, there are things that people. Well, their eyes will just gloss over if they catch it on Facebook or Twitter and just think it's some sort of inside joke.
Well, of course. I mean, they've even made, like, the OK hand symbol, like, a racist symbol. They made the milk a racist symbol for a while. They've really taken innocuous things and turned them into racist symbols. And you know, once they're exposed as a racist symbol, they move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
But as a casual observer, you're just like, what the heck does this thing mean? What does this thing mean? Like, it's often too much for the casual observer to know, like, what the 150 coded symbols are for this.
Yeah. You mentioned the media piece, and I think that is very important. I was watching CTV News Network earlier today, and I don't know if this was, like, copy they were reading from the Toronto Police itself, but they were talking about the van attack a couple of weeks ago, and they said police had not identified a motive. And I thought that was weird, because I thought pretty sure the motive was fairly clear, that it was because this man was identified as an incel and... rather misogynistic in nature, but I wonder if there's, you know, part of the problem is our hesitancy in the media to sometimes just go with what is perfectly obvious in front of us.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll go out on a limb here and say, you know, the alt-right is also partly responsible, I believe, for the alleged van attack in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
If Manassian, as his Facebook post suggested and as Facebook confirmed...
Oh, did we lose Evan?
Oh, that's too bad. I think we might have.
Mm.
Plane took off and blew his cell signal out.
Hitting in his intel stuff.
Oh. Sorry, Evan, you just kind of cut off there. We couldn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Can you
that's
hear me
okay.
Now?
Yeah,
no,
we
can
you.
Hear you
You're
now.
Back,
no,
yeah.
It just, we were making jokes about
your
planes.
Plane flew by or something.
Yeah. We avoided any contrail humor, so don't worry about that.
I was just saying, like, you know, Manassian, if he was consuming 4chan and part of the incel movement, he was also consuming alt-right propaganda, which, you know, glorifies mass killings and suicide. So, you know, was his media diet part of what he did? You know, I think we might find out that that was the case, just like we did with Bissonnet.
Right. And the thing about that, too, is I think there are also stratas of hate. We don't kind of treat hate as... you know, as equal, I guess, you know, people immediately wanted to call the van attack, like, you know, an Islamic attack or Islamic extremist attack. And then when we found out that he was, a white man who was part of an incel group, we sort of start hedging about calling it terror. So we kind of, I guess, self-select what we consider hate and what we consider terror, too.
Certainly, and I mean, I think there's still a commonly shared perception that the worst thing is a neo-Nazi.
Mm.
But, you know, for the Muslim community, several of these, like, anti-Muslim groups that talk about, you know, wanting to deport them or kill them, you know, to that community, I mean, they are the neo-Nazis to the Muslim community.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've got the problem surrounded, but I do want to talk, too, about what you're planning on doing about it. So can you talk a bit about the immediate plans for the network?
Sure. So we kind of rushed our launch to help with these investigations into the alt-right neo-Nazi propagandist Zeiger, who was exposed as a Montreal man.
Mm-hmm.
We were planning on launching a couple weeks later, and to be honest, you know, our launch could have been better. We did rush it.
Mm.
So we're going to get a website up as quickly as possible. You know, we're going to be sharing information about ourselves. It's important to be transparent and accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also going to be sharing, you know, here's the profile of this group, here's what they're about, here's their ideology, here's in their own words what they've said, here's why we're classifying them as a hate group, and also like explaining kind of the ideologies and stuff. So the very first thing they're going to do is that, and it's intended as a resource to journalists, to researchers, and others. You know, journalists might be rushing to like file a copy on a story they don't know about group X or group Y, and if they just Google it, they're going to end up repeating some line that, you know, this group isn't racist, they say they're not racist, other people say they aren't, you know, whatever, that kind of like lame reporting. We want to get a resource up so that journalists will feel confident describing Group X accurately and can rely on our information to do so.
Mm-hmm. And if people wanted to contribute, I know there's a crowdfunding campaign. And how can people do that?
So they can contribute now at antihate.ca. Mm-hmm. We've had a pretty great response. I'm very happy. And so many people have reached out with offers of other kind of support. Mm. And particularly, you know, if you have information on hate groups in your area or anything like that, and you've been wondering, like, where do I share that with? Well, you can share it with us.
Mm-hmm. Let me finish up by asking you about, you know, this has been under the surface for a while, but it's kind of, you know, bubbled up and, you know, it's kind of exposed to the world now, just, you know, how kind of ugly the underbelly can be. For people who think this might simply go away if certain politicians who might be in the White House right now were to suddenly find themselves out of office. You know, this doesn't go away because of one person, right?
No, I mean, Pandora's box has been opened. Mm. Donald Trump certainly did have an effect in giving this movement a lot of energy. But the Pandora's box has been opened now, and this is happening not just where Trump is, but this is happening, you know, across the world. Right. In Europe, like many governments that are you know, extremely strongly tied towards fascism and anti-Semitism and racism and hate are in power in several places in Europe. Mm. So, no, this isn't going anywhere, though I am hopeful that we can, given the nature of the size of it in Canada and the fact that, you know, maybe we can have more of an impact here, you know, I am confident that we can, you know, if we all work hard, we can contain it. Hmm. And kind of prevent the normalization of these racist anti-Canadian attitudes that kind of underpins everything.
Well, from your lips to whoever's listening's ears, we hope so. And Evan, thank you so much for your time today, and we'll try and stay in touch about this, and we'll let you get your plane to wherever you're jetting off to next. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That was, once again, Evan Bolgard, journalist and now the executive director of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. And that went well, considering all the things that could have gone wrong.
Yes.
Not with the interview, but with the technical stuff.
It's pretty amazing what we can do here with the gear that we have.
So. It's amazing what we can do with technology nowadays. That brings us to something a little more mellow to end the show, which is...
but also amazing, man. Yeah, I'm practicing for July 1st, question mark, or no?
The July 1st, question mark, yes. Is a good place to put a question mark.
Yeah.
Because we do have the legalization of cannabis coming up. That was supposed to be July 1st, although we don't have a firm date set yet. The bill is working its way through the Senate. It may come up for a vote on June 7th, but then again, it may not. And then I think it takes between 8 and 12 weeks for it to go into effect. So it might even be like the Labor Day picnic might be your first opportunity to...
allow 8 to 12 weeks for delivery.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it seems like... it does seem like the gears are working against the Trudeau Liberals for this. And I had this thought earlier today that, you know, there are things that the Trudeau government says they're going to do, and they do an awful lot of research and input into it, and then they drop it. Electoral reform. But then there's stuff that they do, and... They're all gung-ho, and they get everything lined up, and it's go time, and then it hits a wall. And that's where we are now with this, is that you have a Senate committee that's saying that not enough outreach was done with First Nations. This should be pushed back a year. You have Health Canada saying, no, it shouldn't be pushed back a year because there was already a danger to young people because it's illegal. And you have... you know, people in the criminal justice system are saying, like, you know, people are still getting arrested for marijuana use, even though in a couple of weeks, you know, they may not be arrested for the same thing.
But you can go to the 420 at City Hall and no one gets arrested, right?
Yeah.
And there's people in jail that have been arrested for things that they will not be arrested for once the law passes. And I don't think it's a case of if it will pass, it's when. Now, Trudeau has came out and said it will be legal by summer. But we'll see about that. It depends on your definition of summer, I guess. Technically, it's over on the 21st of September, right? So
yeah.
Technically.
Yeah.
Do you go by the seasons or do you go by, okay, summer's officially over on Labor Day? So potentially it could
calendar
be
calendar summer or meteorological
exactly.
summer.
Exactly. Plus, there has to be a Senate holiday in there somewhere, 4 to 6 weeks for holidays, which is probably why it's going to take 8 to 12 weeks. This shouldn't be that difficult. I mean, they all knew this was coming. Some of the people chiming in as well. The one of the real estate associations chiming in, it's like they don't want people's homegrown in their houses to affect property prices. It's like you're all, you know, squeaking now, but like where were you before we knew this was coming, right?
Well, not only that, but there's like question marks about apartment buildings and condos where, you know, you're sharing, you know, walls and vents and,
yeah.
you know, if you're blazing up in 401, you know, and I don't want to be get a contact high in 403, you know, what are we going to do?
Well, if the ventilation system's up to snuff, it shouldn't be a problem, but.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Because every building everywhere is up to code,
perfectly
right?
sealed, yeah. yeah, so great. I guess, you know, not unlike cigarettes, right? There is that area where it's, let's say, gray. And I guess that's in terms of the First Nations, our Aboriginal people's committee, I guess it was from the yeah. Senate, were the ones that chimed
yeah.
and said
yeah.
there hasn't been enough detail on the harmful effects. Will they be able to tax it independently? That's a possibility and raise revenue in places
the
where there is no revenue,
yeah.
which would be excellent.
Yeah,
but it sounds like the government or governments, because the provincial is involved as well, it's being administered at the provincial level, probably want all the cupcakes for themselves in terms of making that cash, right? That's why.
Oh, no doubt.
At least in Ontario, it's being run by, what is it, the Ontario?
The OCS, Ontario Cannabis Stores, I think is what it's officially called. And we know where that's going to be in Guelph, oddly enough,
it's
on Stone
paint
Road.
Paint shop, right?
Yeah.
Stone Road.
On Stone Road.
It's so Guelph.
Nailed it. Nailed it, Guelph.
How long till somebody paints a little like white D,
D
on Stone
yeah.
Road? Probably
or
not
erases
long.
The R.
It may have happened
yeah.
already.
It's, yeah. Yeah.
Stoner.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job. Good job, everyone. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, it's not like there aren't things, you know, considerations to be made, but, you know, the more, it's been 3 years almost since the Liberals took office, but this still feels like a rush job. And, you know, it's not an easy thing. You're talking about a societal shift, and while the majority of society, I think, is ready, and I did want to point out, on Yahoo, they had an infograph of what the average pot smoker looks like. And it's someone who is in their 30s, men and women. They are likely to live in a major city, likely in Ontario. They are unmarried. They cover all educational groups. And they work full-time and make $50,000. So these aren't...
It's not Auto Man driving the bus.
Right. It's not Auto smelling like the art teacher's office. It's, it's you know, this is kind of like straight down the
stand
middle...
Stand up, people.
...centrist yeah. kind of politics, although the people we're talking about tend to trend liberal. I think most people do tend to trend liberal in terms of, at least in the social issues like this.
Yeah.
So this should be a layup for the liberals. But, I mean, there's so many unanswered questions. I think the easiest thing they would have done is to decriminalize it and then buy themselves some time and then acclimate people. I mean, you can't go back in time and undo things now. But to acclimate people to it by decriminalizing it, that way you're not putting more people in jail when you're legalizing something in a couple of years or at this point in a couple of weeks. And then you're at the same time, you're sort of getting the police minded, because part of this too is the training for the police. It's like 65,000 police officers across the country have to be trained in how do you recognize someone driving while stoned? How do you recognize 30 grams of pot when you see it?
Well, I think they do a lot of that already, but the problem, it's in terms of how are they going to approach it legally. I think there was two pieces of legislation, the legalizing cannabis was C-45 mm-hmm. and then the the new impaired offenses were Bill C-46, and I think they were kind of following each other through the in tandem, ideally to be passed at the same time. And one of the key problems is there isn't a roadside test for cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of like, well, I mean, you always see it in the movies, TV, border security.
Breathalyzer.
Or wow, what's that smell? And then they root around for a bit and they find the bud, right? So, or at least the crumbs.
And depending on what herb you're buying.
It's, or you open the roll down the window and a cloud comes out and be like, hey, dude.
Just from my old hotel days.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on your herb of choice, it's not difficult to detect. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, but it would be difficult to make charges stick because you could say, well, this is actually my dad's car and he's a hippie. No, I don't know. Yeah, that kind of stuff. There's all sorts of outs and people will find the out. And this was other than the real estate people, Mad Canada chiming in saying, you know, you need to do a solid on that. But, and they're saying before it becomes legal, but the majority of people, I think most people have accepted, even if it isn't legal and even if it isn't decriminalized, it's there. It's out there. It's not as if it's going to go away. You know, so it's the wheels are in motion now to legitimize it, but it's not as if, we all woke up and weed was a new, try this new thing called marijuana, right? So that's not going to change. I don't think people's attitudes towards it are going to be changed irrevocably. You know, just because it's legal now, it's like there's not going to be a ton. You listed the demographic. It's not as if there's going to be all these new people. They seem so paranoid. The paranoia from the weed or just in general from there was something Doug Ford said in the debate, actually. Well, you put it, you're going to put it beside a school, Kathleen Wayne. You're going to put this weed thing beside a school. Like, you know, every school has like, in Guelph here, like the liquor store is usually within reach. So it's like,
it's funny you should say that because apparently, according to Health Canada, Canada has the highest rate of youth use of marijuana. So the fact that it's illegal isn't stopping kids from getting their hands on it. And if it is legalized, perhaps, you know, it will catch a few kids because certainly kid isn't going to walk into the OCS and be like, yeah, 30 grams of this, please, because they're going to ask for ID.
I wonder if in the beginning they're going to check everybody's ID.
Well,
my only concern was that if they're going to scan it,
which
I don't think they can do legally.
I don't think so. I imagine it's going to be like LCBO.
But that's what they do, though. What's your postal code pretty much reveals all.
But you're right. So the reefer madness thing is what gets me because like, there's nobody sitting around waiting for marijuana to be legalized to start trying it.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Of all people. Yeah. I mean, Doug's brother, king of the reefer, pretty much. What's he worried about?
Worse than like reefer hash.
Well, allegedly, right?
Allegedly.
Yeah, but we know.
Fair enough, allegedly.
We know that's...
Fair enough, allegedly.
He's following us on Twitter, man. You know, we got to...
You're right, we got to keep it clean.
Or his bot is, anyway.
We got to keep it clean.
Sorry, Doug's bot.
Speaking of the election that is now on, the next several weeks, next few weeks, it's not like it's a 58-day election, anyway.
They're not like that, well, yeah. Remember those days?
Remember back in 20-dickety-5, anyway.
200 days in, we're like, just kill me now.
Yeah. Anyway, next week... We will have Communist Party candidate Juanita Burnett on the show and Green Party candidate Mike Schreiner. On May the 24th, we will have Alliance Party candidate Thomas Mooney. And on May the 31st, we will have Liberal candidates Sly Castaldi. We are waiting to hear back from a couple of the other candidates to get them in slots. And we'll let you know when that happens. You can stay connected to us at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And you can find this and other episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog on occasion at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And unless we don't see you down at the debate, we will see you next Thursday at 5 p.m. In the meantime, DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. And we'll be back next week, and we'll see you then.